88. Talk at home of Mr. and Mrs. Arthur J. Parsons. 6th August 1912. Dublin, New Hampshire. Notes by Howard McNutt. Today we are enjoying temperate weather. As there are many strangers present, we will answer questions. Question: are not all Christians Baha'is? Is there any difference? Answer: when Christians act according to the teachings of Christ, they are called Baha'is, for the foundations of Christianity and the religion of Baha'u'llah are one. The foundations of all the divine prophets and holy books are one. The difference among them is one of terminology only. Each springtime is identical with the former springtime. The distinction between them is only one of the calendar, 1911, 1912, and so on. The difference between a Christian and a Baha'i, therefore, is this. There was a former springtime, and there is a springtime now. No other difference exists, because the foundations are the same. Whoever acts completely in accordance with the teachings of Christ is a Baha'i. The purpose is the essential meaning of Christian, not the mere word. The purpose is the sun itself, and not the dawning points. For though the sun is one sun, its dawning points are many. We must not adore the dawning points, but worship the sun. We must adore the reality of religion, and not blindly cling to the appellation Christianity. The sun of reality must be worshipped and followed. We must seek the fragrance of the rose from whatever bush it is blooming, whether oriental or western. Be seekers of light, no matter from which lantern it shines forth. Be not lovers of the lantern. At one time, the light has shone from a lantern in the east, now in the west. If it comes from north, south, from whatever direction it proceeds, follow the light. Let me illustrate further. A certain person bestowed a coin upon five beggars. They resolved to spend it for food. The Englishman said, "Buy grapes." The Turk wanted uzum, the Arab anab, the Greek staphyli, the Persian angur. Not understanding each other's language, they quarrelled and fought. A stranger came along. He was familiar with all five languages. He said, "Give me the coin, I will buy what you wish." When he bought them grapes, they were all satisfied. They wanted the same thing, but differed in the term only. Briefly, when reality dawns in the midst of the religions, all will be unified and reconciled. Question: does Abdu'l-Bahá find Christianity is not lived up to and carried out in America? Answer: my meaning is that it should be completely carried out and lived up to. Man needs eyes, ears, arms, a head, feet, and various other members. When he possesses all, and all work together, there is symmetry and perfection in him. So Christ said, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect," meaning that perfection is the requirement of Christianity. Be the image and likeness of God. This is not easy. It necessitates the focalization of all heavenly virtues. It requires that we become recipients of all the perfections of God. Then we become his image and likeness. For in the Bible it is stated, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness." The attainment of this is most difficult. When Christ appeared with those marvellous breaths of the Holy Spirit, the children of Israel said, "We are quite independent of him. We can do without him and follow Moses. We have a book, and in it are found the teachings of God. What need, therefore, have we of this man?" Christ said to them, "The book sufficeth you not." It is possible for a man to hold to a book of medicine and say, "I have no need of a doctor, I will act according to the book. In it every disease is named, all symptoms are explained, the diagnosis of each ailment is completely written out, and a prescription for each malady is furnished. Therefore, why do I need a doctor?" This is sheer ignorance. A physician is needed to prescribe. Through his skill, the principles of the book are correctly and effectively applied until the patient is restored to health. Christ was a heavenly physician. He brought spiritual health and healing into the world. Baha'u'llah is likewise a divine physician. He has revealed prescriptions for removing disease from the body politic and has remedied human conditions by spiritual power. Therefore, mere knowledge is not sufficient for complete human attainment. The teachings of the holy books need a heavenly power and divine potency to carry them out. A house is not built by mere acquaintance with the plans. Money must be forthcoming. Volition is necessary to construct it. A carpenter must be employed in its erection. It is not enough to say, "The plan and purpose of this house are very good. I will live in it." There are no walls of protection. There is no roof of shelter in this mere statement. The house must be actually built before we can live in it. Briefly, the teachings of the holy books need a divine potency to complete their accomplishment in human hearts. In Persia, Baha'u'llah reared and taught souls, established a bond of affiliation among various peoples, and united divergent religious beliefs to such an extent that 20,000 devoted ones sacrificed themselves for the cause of God in the glorious unity of martyrdom. No differences whatever remained among these blessed souls. Christians, Jews, Muslims, Zoroastrians, all blended, unified, and agreed through the potency of his heavenly power. Not by mere words, not by merely saying, "Unity is good and love is praiseworthy." Baha'u'llah not only proclaimed this unity and love, he established it. As a heavenly physician, he not only gave prescriptions for these ailments of discord and hatred, but accomplished the actual healing. We may read in a medical book that a certain form of illness requires such and such a remedy. While this may be absolutely true, the remedy is useless unless there be volition and executive force to apply it. Every man in the king's army can give a command, but when the king speaks, it is carried out. This one, that one may say, "Go, conquer a country." But when the king says, "Go," the army advances. Therefore, it is evident that the confirmation of the Holy Spirit and impelling influence of a heavenly power are needed to accomplish the divine purpose in human hearts and conditions. Jesus Christ, single, solitary, and alone, accomplished what all the kings of the earth could not have carried out. If all the kingdoms and nations of the world had combined to effect it, they would have failed. It is therefore evident and proved that an effort must be put forward to complete the purpose and plan of the teachings of God, in order that in this great day of days, the world may be reformed, souls resuscitated, a new spirit of life found, hearts become illumined, mankind rescued from the bondage of nature, saved from the baseness of materialism, and attain spirituality and radiance in attraction toward the divine kingdom. This is necessary. This is needful. Mere reading of the holy books and texts will not suffice. Many years ago, in Baghdad, I saw a certain officer sitting upon the ground. Before him, a large paper was placed, into which he was sticking needles tipped with small red and white flags. First he would stick them into the paper, then thoughtfully pull them out and change their position. I watched him with curious interest for a long time, then asked, "What are you doing?" He replied, "I have in mind something which is historically related of Napoleon I during his war against Austria." One day, it is said, his secretary found him sitting upon the ground, as I am now doing, sticking needles into a paper before him. His secretary inquired what it meant. Napoleon answered, "I am on the battlefield figuring out my next victory. You see, Italy and Austria are defeated and France is triumphant." In the great campaign which followed, everything came out just as he said. His army carried his plans to a complete success. Now, I am doing the same as Napoleon, figuring out a great campaign of military conquest. I said, "Where is your army?" Napoleon had an army already equipped when he figured out his victory. You have no army. Your forces exist only on paper. You have no power to conquer countries. First get ready your army, then sit upon the ground with your needles. We need an army to attain victory in the spiritual world. Mere plans are not sufficient. Ideas and principles are helpless without a divine power to put them into effect. Aside from all this, there is need of the stimulus of the joy of glad tidings in human hearts. Certain spiritual attraction is requisite in order that hearts may willingly take the step forward in the divine cause. We must become attracted to God. The breaths of the Holy Spirit must take effect. Unless this is so, it is impossible for the teachings of God to accomplish in us. An ideal power is necessary. The people of America have remarkable quick perception, intelligence, and understanding. Their thoughts are free and not fettered by the yoke of governmental tyranny. They should investigate reality and not be occupied with ancestral forms and imitations. Consider what Christ accomplished. He caused souls to attain a station where, with complete willingness and joy, they laid down their lives. What a power! Thousands of human souls, in the utmost joy, because of their spiritual susceptibilities, were so attracted to God that they were dispossessed of volition, deprived of will in his path. If they had been told simply that sacrifice in the path of God was good and praiseworthy, this would never have happened. They would not have acted. Christ attracted them, wrested the reins of control from them, and they went forth in ecstasy to sacrifice themselves. Ghurratul Ayn was a Persian woman without fame and importance, unknown, like all other Persian women. When she saw Baha'u'llah, she changed completely, visibly, and looked within another world. The reins of volition were taken out of her hands by heavenly attraction. She was so overcome that physical susceptibilities ceased. Her husband, her sons, and her family arose in the greatest hostility against Baha'u'llah. She became so attracted to the divine threshold that she forsook everything and went forth to the plain of Badasht, no fear in her heart, dauntless, intrepid, openly proclaiming the message of light which had come to her. The Persian government stood against her. They made every effort to quiet her. They imprisoned her in the governor's house, but she continued to speak. Then she was taken and killed. To her very last breath, she spoke with fervid eloquence, and so became famous for her complete attraction in the path of God. If she had not seen Baha'u'llah, no such effect would have been produced. She had read and heard the teachings of scriptures all her life, but the action and enkindlement were missing. All women in Persia are enveloped in veils in public. So completely covered are they that even the hand is not visible. This rigid veiling is unspeakable. Qurratul Ayn tore off her veils and went forth fearlessly. She was like a lioness. Her action caused a great turmoil throughout the land of Persia. So excessive and compulsory is the requirement for veiling in the East that the people in the West have no idea of the excitement and indignation produced by the appearance of an unveiled woman. Qurratul Ayn lost all thought of herself and was unconscious of fear in her attraction to God. Question: do the Baha'i women go without veils in the East? Answer: it is not possible for them to do so universally yet, but the conditions are not nearly so restrictive as they were. The Baha'i men and women meet together. This is the beginning of woman's emancipation from the thraldom of centuries. Qurratul Ayn was really the liberator of all Persian women.